Welcome to Building Justice, a podcast by Sacramento State's Center on Race, Immigration, and Social Justice. We explore critical issues affecting our communities with the hopes of creating a healthier and more just world.
I am Victor Rodriguez Tafoya, Communication Studies student, and in collaboration with Associate Professor of Sociology, Dr. Lina Rincon, we have the pleasure to introduce an interview with Stephanie Cruz, Associate Director and Deputy Title IX Coordinator of the Office of Equal Opportunity, Division of Inclusive Excellence at Sacramento State.
Hello, everybody. It's great to be here. My name is Lina Rincon. I'm an associate professor in the sociology department, and I'm here with...
My name is Victor Rodriguez Tafoya, and I'm a student of communication studies with an emphasis in intercultural communications.
We're here. We're super excited to be with Stephanie.
Stephanie, thanks for having us today.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm so excited.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, the title, your work here at the university, at the Office of Equal Opportunity.
Yeah, so my name is Stephanie Cruz. I use she, her pronouns. I've been with the university since 2016. And my role is, I'm currently the Associate Director for the Office for Equal Opportunity under the Division of Inclusive Excellence. So our office is responsible for responding to issues of discrimination, harassment, sexual assault, sexual violence, dating violence, things of that nature. We often are referred to as the Title IX office. And so Title IX encompasses those things such as sexual assault and gender-based violence. So those are the things that we really work to hopefully prevent on this campus.
Tell us a little bit more about your role, but I would like to know more how you got into your role. What motivated you to do what you do now?
I went to law school, and when I graduated law school, I was working in plaintiff side employment law. So what that means is the firm I was at was often representing women and minorities who've experienced discrimination or sexual harassment in the workplace. So I was doing that for a while, and then I was living in San Francisco, and you know, I ended up getting engaged, and the idea of, well, we'll never be able to afford living here in San Francisco if we're going to raise a family. So I started thinking that I wanted to move into the public sector. And then I ended up getting a job at the Department of Fair Employment and Housing, which is now known as the Office for Civil Rights here in California. And there we investigated workplace claims of sexual harassment. And so in doing that, you know, I've always loved college. When I was in college, I loved it. When I was in law school, I loved school. I've always loved school. And when the opportunity to move to Sac State appeared doing the same work, I got really excited and I applied and I got the job here. And so it was just really something that has resonated with me, because when I was in law school working at the plaintiff side employment firm, It was discouraging to see that, you know, you whether you're a person of color or you're a woman, and you do everything you can to be what, you know, what we say is successful. You know, you go to a good school, you get a good job, you climb the ladder, but then you still experience harassment. It was just so discouraging. And I always thought, like, okay, well, maybe if I could be like in-house somewhere, you know, work for a company or an organization, maybe we could stop these things from escalating to this level, because we could address them when we first start hearing it happen. So that was really what kind of drew me here. And then what's kept me here is the students. I love working with students. I think you would agree, right? Working with students is so amazing. It's the best. And then, like, especially, like, I love working with our student interns. And my favorite thing is when you get, you get a student sort of early on in their college career, maybe like a freshman or a sophomore, and then you see them grow. As you know, Monday was the AICP showcase. And one of our student interns, Sumaya, interviewed President Wood. And Sumaya started working with our office when she was a freshman. And I was just calling it a very proud moment. I was there at the stage taking a picture. And I was like, you're doing amazing, sweetie. I had those moments. It's so amazing to watch students grow. And so that's what's kept me here. And I see myself working in higher education for a while. I just love being with students.
And where are you from originally? What's your background in schooling? What school do you go to?
Okay, So I was born in San Francisco, went to school here in the Sacramento area in Elk Grove, and then I went away for several years. I was in, I went to college at UC Irvine. So I was living in Orange County for a while, and then I went to law school in San Francisco, stayed in San Francisco for a little bit after law school, and then moved back here in 2015.
Came back home.
Came back home. My family's here. My family is here and in the Bay Area. So yeah, we came back home.
Stephanie and I had the chance to work together.
Yeah.
I used to work in the Division of Inclusive Excellence. And one thing that I learned as I was working there, I remember about a year ago, Stephanie was saying, you know, you should wear teal because April is coming up. Mm-hmm. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And this is the very topic that we're discussing today, you know, that event. So I'm wondering if we could share a little bit about this event, why it matters, why should we get engaged?
Yeah, so April is, as Lena said, is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And what that is that we are looking on how we can make our campus community and the community at large, one, aware of the sexual violence that occurs, particularly, you know, the heightened risk for college students, and two, like, what can we do as a community to prevent it? How can we push back on, you know, things like rape culture? And one of the things that we do, the first Tuesday of every April is nationally recognized as the Sexual Assault Awareness Month Day of Action. So SAM Day of Action. Mm-hmm. And this year we're hosting a SAM Day of Action Fair. It's going to be from 11 to 2 p.m. in the library quad. And we have about 18 student groups and community members participating. They'll be out there tabling, sharing resources, and each table will be also doing a prevention activity to hopefully educate, you know, a student that's coming by or a community member that's walking by on ways that they can, you know, end sexual violence. So it could be as simple as, like, there's this one activity that our students set up where, you know, you put a chip in like a Plinko board, and then a scenario comes out and it says, okay, in this scenario, what would you do if you were witnessing this? How would you, you know, be an active bystander? And so how can you interrupt when you see these things happen? How can you interrupt them and hopefully prevent things from happening?
What would you say to someone that, like you mentioned, you know, witness, how can somebody be an ally? How can you build more awareness to individuals that might notice something that it's wrong, mm-hmm. but to give them strength to be, you know, strong ally?
Yeah, so we always talk about, you know, how can you can either, you know, distract, you could, you know, do something to, so for example, when we have students that, you know, tell us about, like, you know, I was at a party and I saw something happen that didn't look all right. We talked about, you know, distracting, you know, maybe you see your friend being pulled away and your friend might have drank too much and you're unsure if they're able to consent to anything. You know, you can distract them. You can, like, say, oh, hey, you want to come with me over here? And, like, you want to get a water with me? Or, like, oh, let's go talk to this person here. We teach students to distract. Another thing that we do is we teach them to delegate. So maybe you don't want to approach the person, but maybe there's someone that you know that is more comfortable doing so. So you can go ahead and grab them and maybe approach someone together. So we talk about, we go through these things with students, and a lot of students, like, pose different scenarios to us. And so those are some of the things that at this fair, hopefully someone who's like a passerby maybe at least be able to, like, think about it by participating. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things that we're hoping to accomplish.
Can you talk a little about the history of SAM and most important, that maintenance, not only yearly, but on a daily, to have people aware that this is something that we need to be cautious.
Oh, definitely, definitely. So I don't know if you can see, but we have the poster board here. So Sexual Assault Awareness Month, it has a lot of movements in the moment. So Sexual Assault Awareness Week actually started in the 1980s. And then they, when advocates wanted to just bring, it's really just bringing awareness, hey, sexual violence happens, you know? And then in the 90s, it became, they started hosting events throughout the month of April. But it wasn't officially recognized as a month until 2001. And at that point, it was nationally adopted. And the idea behind that was to create, like, cohesion nationally on how can we one, raise awareness, elevate the issues, and then two, like have cohesive events throughout the month to help people understand and begin to expect, like, okay, it's April, this is coming. So like how you said last year, I said, hey, you should wear teal, and then now you're like, oh, it's April, maybe I should wear teal. And I can talk about, so teal was chosen as the official color because survivors found that the color teal was healing. And what is also interesting, they also said that it was it symbolizes dedication. Okay, dedication to what? That's the part that really resonates with me. And dedication to trying to prevent sexual violence from occurring, to end sexual violence, because, you know, it's pretty widespread and more so than people realize because it often goes unreported.
I like to follow up. So, you know, of course I wore teal because I knew it, but mm-hmm. could you tell us more a little bit about, you know, why teal matters? And you share mm-hmm. that, but also mm-hmm. denim.
Oh, denim, yes.
Why are these symbols of this 1 month, and why is it important to wear teal or denim?
Yeah, so I actually think I have teal ribbons for both of you, too.
Oh, thank you. Love it.
You can remember in April. But denim, and so the last Wednesday of every April is known as Denim Day. And Denim Day has been occurring since the early 2000s. And why that occurs is it's a response to an Italian Supreme Court case in the 90s where the Italian Supreme Court, you know, ruled that a woman who was unconscious and wearing tight jeans must have consented to a sexual assault because her jeans were so tight. How did the perpetrator remove her jeans without her helping him? And so in a response to this ruling, Italian legislators, the next day, female legislators wore denim and wore, you know, tight jeans and different kinds of jeans to protest the ruling. And it caught the attention of the world. And then female identifying politicians all over the world began wearing denim to show their support and solidarity and to raise awareness that clothing does not equal consent. It doesn't matter what you're wearing. And it became a movement. So wearing denim during the month of April shows that you understand that clothing doesn't equal consent and that what someone wears doesn't mean that someone is asking for, you know, pushing back against some of those stereotypes that we hear.
What are those numbers that, you know, are recorded, the statistics on victims of sexual assault, women, men, transgender community members? What are the numbers out there that you know about?
So for college female identifying students, the number is about 1 in 5 female students have experienced sexual violence. And so I know that folks, you know, when they hear sexual violence, they automatically think rape, you know, but there are other forms of sexual violence, interpersonal violence. For our male identifying students, the number is about 1 in 20, but, you know, people who work in this field know that that number is incorrect because male student identifying students tend to not report sexual assault at a much higher rate than female students. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we see. And then the risk again goes up for transgender students, mm-hmm. for students of color, for disabled students. And so those are some things that we try to be intentional about when we're planning things. So last year, for example, we hosted a workshop that was in partnership with the Male Empowerment Collective here on campus, because we wanted to have some sort of like a smaller space where male students can feel comfortable, realize and kind of hear that, you know, like, yes, this does happen and you're not alone, but also that you so often, you know, like the media portrays male identifying folks as the problem when it comes to sexual violence. We try to call them in and be like, you are a part of the solution. Mm-hmm. You know, like mm-hmm. that's why we want to host these workshops so you can see and listen how you can be a part of the solution, how you can interrupt when right. you see like violence happening. And so that's what we did last year. And then this year, our focus, we are doing a partnership with the Disability Access Center here on campus. I don't know if either of you know, but you know how they opened the Disability Cultural Center over the summer in the AIRC? Mm-hmm. It's really cool. So it's going to be there, and we're hosting a workshop on Tuesday at 2 o'clock, and it's specifically for our disabled students on campus, and it's called Sex is for Everybody, and it's the idea that, you know, disabled students have sex too, and it talks a lot about, you know, how you can do it, accessibility, pain management, things like that. And it's the first time we've ever done anything like that on this campus. So I'm really excited.
So based on what you've shared, you know, earlier you shared your professional connections mm-hmm. to this work that you're doing. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see if you would be open to sharing some personal connections to this topic. You are very passionate about this, like a strong advocate on campus. So what are some other connections that you have made with this work?
Some of the things that we go and we talk about when we're doing this work is like how it's impacted folks, particularly, you know, people of color. So we like to start all of our events with a historical acknowledgement, acknowledging that, you know, in America, there was significant, you know, sexual violence, imparted onto those who were here first by colonizers, you know, yeah. the native and indigenous populations. So colonization, you know, that happens many places beyond here. And so I can share, like, with in my family and our background, you know, my dad is from the Philippines. My mother's grandparents are from the Philippines. And, you know, they were impacted by sexual violence from the wars and from mm-hmm. colonization. Mm-hmm. And so I will share that I do have my great grandmother had a child that was a product of sexual violence. And so it's something that, you know, deeply resonates with me. And I feel like it really ties into, you know, not just, you know, your identity as being female, but like, you know, your culture, your race, your national origin, all those things. I feel mm-hmm. like it has a lot of personal ties. And I will say that most people who do this work, like, do have some sort of connection, whether directly or indirectly. So I think that's where the passion comes from.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Let's think about intergenerational traumas mm-hmm. That can cause tension, and how we are so privileged to have an education and open mind to ideas that challenge those ideas of that are feeding the generational trauma. Mm-hmm. You talk about how our you know, in our culture, our grandparents, mothers might have been victims of, but I also see that a lot of times that idea of don't say anything.
Oh, 100%. Yes.
Hey, no, we don't talk about this topic. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's not helping not only heal, but make things better. Mm-hmm. Even for, you know, let's say my sisters and that idea of like, hey, don't talk about it. No, no digas nada. Mm-hmm. What would you say about, you know, challenging those cultural misconceptions?
So that, Victor, is a hard one. And it's one that, you know, I face in my personal life yeah. often, yeah. you know? And so I will say, I don't know about you, but I know that, you know, like in my family, they're like, oh, you go to therapy? Like, oh, yes. And it's like, don't you just go to church or pray or something? Yeah. And like, keep it in the family.
Are you wasting your time
therapy? Yeah. You're giving money to a stranger to tell your problems to. Yeah. You know, those are yeah. the things I hear.
Absolutely.
But what's interesting in my family specifically is that in this generation, so me and my cousin, so I come from a family that is, we're pretty much all girls. Like we come from a girl family. We always say that. And my generation has been really good about going to therapy and talking about it. So wow. it's something that we will joke about in family events, you know, we'll say it in front of, you know, our grandparents and things. And we'll say like, we'll jokingly say, okay, so what did you say about me in therapy? What did you say yeah. about us in therapy? Yeah. Yeah. And then, well, you know, my grandma will be like, you know, we don't really talk about those things, but then we'll just say it kind of like jokingly. But then also I like to remind them, like, I'm sorry you went through this. Like, I'm sorry you went through something. And I'm sorry that, you know, at the time you were told to be quiet or you were silenced, but how you felt then, I don't want, I have a daughter, and I'll say like, I don't want my daughter to ever feel like that. And that those are some of the things I say to like my grandparents and my family. I have to like relay it to a very small young person for them to be like, okay, yeah, you're right. Like, I wouldn't want them to experience that. But, you know, there's still a little bit of the pushback with like, you know, people like us older ones being like, okay, do you really need to like air this out? Like, do you really need to go on a podcast and share this? Right? Yeah, do you really need to air this out? But I will say, like, it is something that, you know, I have brought up saying, like, you know, I'm sorry that you went through that. You know, my grandmother, for example, she used to tell me stories about when she was living in the Philippines and like hiding in a bunker because there were, you know, people going through their towns and, you know, raping folks. And she says she remembers like hiding in there with her sisters and her mother and her cousins and her aunts. But she was privileged enough to do that because she came from a military family. So they were Filipino and white living in the Philippines. And at least they had access to these bunkers to hide in. So it's so hard because like, yes, that's so traumatic. But then also you think like, oh, what a privilege to be able to like hide in some place you actually had a place to like hide and stuff. So it's a challenge, and I do like to remind, you know, the generations that have come before us, like, I'm sorry you felt that way, I'm sorry that that happened to you. Do you want to carry that on? And I will say, my mom, for example, her becoming a grandmother has caused her to kind of reflect on some of the things that when she was a kid, like, for example, like my daughter said something and, you know, she's a little sassy. My daughter can be a little sassy. And my mom made a comment like, oh, I could have never said that when I was a kid. And then my daughter said, well, you love me, so it doesn't matter. Like, and it's so like we were telling. So my mom was like, huh, you're right. Like, I didn't feel comfortable saying those things because I didn't feel as my daughter feels like, oh, you're going to love me regardless. So
yeah.
So it's a challenge. It's really challenging. So if you know the answer, Victor, I'd love to hear.
No, I think I agree with you because I have the same challenge every day. Every conversation I've had at home. I think at the beginning when I started bringing up specific topics, it was tense. And there was a lot of fight back. Or how are you going to talk to your elders like that? How are you going to talk to your mom like that? How are you going to reply to something? You should just stay quiet. But little by little, I noticed that, you know, it's been taking some time, maybe like 3-4 years, to where now they're starting to understand. And they're starting to see that, yes, I'm being a little rebel, but there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
You know, they're, I'm trying to change the idea of, that continues with that string of generational traumas. It's been taking time, but I've also noticed that, you know, in all the extended cultures that we share here in Sacramento, we all have very similar challenges.
Yes, for sure.
You made me think about the importance of sharing history with the new generations. You know, similar to two of you, I deal with this in the family, and it's like, no, you shouldn't talk about that. But with the newer generations, it's really understanding that maybe we have some traumatic things happening in the past, but it's important to share them and that there's love all around, hopefully. So I you know, I like what we're sharing here.
You know, I'll have to like pull a picture up on my phone and show you later, but my daughter recently, she's in first grade, and she recently had a cultural project at school. And so my daughter's multiracial, but she chose to do the Philippines, and you had to make a little like doll. And then she had the doll holding a book. And in the book, she wrote, the Filipinos were having a nice day. And then the Spanish came and colonized them for 333 years.
Amazing. Wow.
So just like the idea that, and I will show you the picture. It was so funny. But the idea that when they're saying like, let's talk about culture, you know, and they say, okay, this is a part of our culture. This is what happened to us. Like, this is what happened to my ancestors. Like, that actually made me, like, extremely happy. I'm like, okay, she's listening to some of the conversations that we're sharing. And we're having maybe different conversations than what I got at that age. So I think, like, you talk about, like, breaking, you know, the generational trauma, I think, like, how can we, like, how does it end with me? That's what I always mm-hmm. think. Like, how does it end with yeah. me? And yeah. then how do we benefit the next generation so they don't have Absolutely. As many hurdles? Yeah. And I think, like, you know, talking to, like, you know, you said, like, your elders and stuff about, like, we're trying to make it easier for them. Right. So, like, right. let's do that.
Yeah.
And I think we have a level of privilege somewhat being yes. able to go to school, being able to look at history with a different lens, where we also explore history, not just being instructed, mm-hmm. and see that other side of it. And what would you say to individuals that maybe they haven't had the privilege of, you know, opening their minds because they're comfortable, life is good, nothing mm-hmm. has happened, but mm-hmm. maybe they don't have the lens of understanding of the struggles that certain families, groups, community members go through mm-hmm. That shut them and they don't speak out about things.
That in of itself is a challenge. And I mean, I will say, even like within, you know, your in families, like I definitely can think of people in my head that like they're not as open to discussing mm-hmm. these things. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. And they're not in the older generation. They're just, mm-hmm. let's just Absolutely. Move on. Let's just right. move on. Like, we're already here. We're privileged. We're going to school. You know, all these things, like, they don't want to talk about it. And so that's just like something that, I mean, I can share one thing that I often say is, like, you may not want to talk about it, but it affects by not talking about it. You know, like, silence is complicit. So mm-hmm. I like to remind them of that. And maybe you're not going to talk about it, but I hope, like, the next generation will. If it's mm-hmm. gonna, if it's not you, maybe it's going to be your kids, or maybe it's going to be, like, your students, whoever it is. But, mm-hmm. like, I hope that they – it's so hard because, like, you know, you want them to recognize – what's happening in the world, you know, but mm-hmm. most people, like, if it doesn't affect them,
they just move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a challenge. Mm-hmm. You see that a lot too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you even make me think about not just family, but even working. I imagine it's interesting to work here at a university, right? Maybe sometimes you come across faculty staff that are just like totally denying some mm-hmm. of your messages. So mm-hmm. I'm sure that challenge, I don't know if it presents itself, not just in your family, but, you know, maybe people that are, you know, more old school that are ignoring these messages.
Yeah, I will say, so when I started here, mm-hmm. That's 2016. I'm coming up on my eighth year anniversary.
Congratulations.
Here. Thank you. But when I started here, I definitely saw that from some of, like, the older faculty members. Mm. But I've noticed, especially, like, post-COVID, that has been lessening a lot. So I'm very happy about that. That's we've great. Had some, we've had a lot of, you know, faculty come in and be really passionate about the subject. And also, like, what I think when you're starting out as a faculty member, you may not realize, like, how much students are going to come to you first.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, about things not related to your subject matter expertise. And so, like, that's one thing with, like, new faculty. They come in and, you know, a student discloses. So this is, like, the most common situation.
It's very common.
A student says, oh, hey, I'm so sorry. I turned in that paper late. Mm-hmm. I was assaulted over the weekend.
And then I've been there.
You've been there, right?
I've been there. And you were like, what do I do?
Yes, right? Exactly. And so what we're starting to see is new faculty coming in, being in that situation mm-hmm. and being like, okay, please tell me more. Like, I want to be able to support mm-hmm. students in this mm-hmm. way. So I will say that for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we like to do a professional development activity mm-hmm. for our staff and faculty mm-hmm. because they do want to support students and mm-hmm. they just want the tools. So on April 16th, we're having a workshop in partnership with our confidential advocates on campus, Weave, and it's called We've Got You. And it's this really great program they put together, and I attended it myself last fall. And what they do is it's specifically designed for folks working in a university, mm-hmm. and it's how you can respond to disclosures in a trauma-informed way and how you can learn your resources that are available to students. So when they come to you, you, one, know how to respond and listen to them. Two, know your duty to report. And three, can point them in the right direction mm-hmm. in a comforting way. And so that is something that we really hope folks attend, because mm-hmm. I think that I mean, you attended our employee session last year when we had a psychiatrist come in to talk about trauma in the brain. And we have just felt that, you know, our staff and faculty, they want these experiences. And so it's important to us every April to do something of that scale to help folks support our students. You know, we're trying to help those who help others. So.
I'd like to ask you something. So, of course, we're doing this podcast to really elevate what's happening in April. But, you know, after April, what are some resources that faculty, staff, students can access so they can continue their education on this topic?
So one of the things is, you know, we do have events throughout the year. And they're going to be posted on the Sac State OEO website. But really, you know, we offer trainings by request. We offer, you know, students, sometimes faculty members say, like, hey, can you just come in and talk to my students? You know, and we talk about, like, interpersonal violence. We talk about dating violence, stalking. You know, last semester we did, let me think. So this calendar year, last semester we did like 73 individual trainings and for folks on campus. And so sometimes people come with to us with very specific requests, like they want to know more about stalking, for instance. And then we'll go in and we'll do a training on that and like just help educate people and keep them learning about it.
Can you give us another rundown of the events coming up and specifically Sam Evan and Sac State?
So like I said, Tuesday is our fair, 11 to 2 in the library quad. It'll be really fun. We have so many different groups coming, and we give students who attend, we'll give everyone who attends, so you can come too and you can get this too, but we give folks a punch card with 10 spaces, and there'll be like 18 different groups. And if you do 10 of the activities out of the 18, you can redeem your punch card for a free item off of the food trucks that we're having there. We did this similar model for in October for Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we had such great feedback. Like, we had almost 300 students complete the entire card and get a food truck.
Nice.
So in our heads, we're like, okay, that's 300 students who had 10 interactions about the topic that they wouldn't otherwise have. Like, this is great. And that didn't count like the hundreds of students that came by for a little bit and didn't have time to do the whole punch card system. So we have that. That's what, 11 to 2 on Tuesday, April 2nd. At 2 o'clock that day, we're having a workshop in the Disability Cultural Center, and that's the one, Sex is for Everybody, hosted by Kaylee Trace. And she is she describes herself as a queer disabled femme. And Kaylee will be back with us on Wednesday as well for our keynote speech called, it is called The Fucking Facts, Lessons in Pleasure and Safety. And so, yep, that's our ad right there. And then so that's going to be really fun. It's going to be all she describes it as all the sex ed you didn't know you needed. And it's going to go through the nitty and gritty details and all the awkward details on how you can maximize pleasure and minimize risk when it comes to sex.
I love that.
Right? And then so I think our students are going to love it. And what's really great is if you come, if you're a student and you come to the event and you are entered to win a free parking pass for the next semester. So it's pretty good.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so that one is 12 to 1 in the Pacific Suite at the University Union. So that'll be really fun. We also have what we call the Teal Games. And the softball game is April 12th at 2:30. And what that is our partnership with athletics. They have their players wear teal hair ribbons for softball and teal ribbons on the caps for baseball. And what's really great is the announcer embeds different facts and information about events coming up throughout the game. So, for example, I don't know, are either of you baseball fans?
Not
so much. Okay, so let me think.
Maybe
of
more soccer.
Let me think of one that you would know then. So, for example, they're all baseball themed, but one of them that you would understand then is let's strike out sexual violence together as a community. And so there's a ton of little baseball references weaved in, and the announcer does that. And so it's just a way to like for athletics also to show like how they support it and to elevate it to the community, since they have a lot of community members attend. What's really great is that So the softball is April 12th at 2:30. And then, but on the 26th of April is baseball. And we got President Wood to throw out the first pitch for that game. So it'll be really exciting for that. We also have Denim Day, which is Wednesday, and Take Back the Night. And that's hosted by our confidential advocates on campus. And that's from 4:30 to 6:30 in the library quad. So that'll be fun too. There's so many things you could do to get involved. So I hope to see you all there at something.
Yeah.
We'll be there. Now, I want to invite those who are listening or watching to have a commitment and carry on the awareness and the fight and be an ally. Now, as we're here, let us commit with something. I'm going to commit as a Mexicano, as a man, as a male, to be more aware, to be an ally, and to help those around us.
I am going to commit to continue to educate those around me. I do struggle sometimes with family and sometimes with men in my life to really recognize this as an issue. So I'm going to commit to continue to push and to share histories and to share love and awareness.
I am going to commit to continuing to encourage our office and our division to host these kind of events for students and bring these events to students. But personally, in my personal life, I'm going to commit to raising awareness and teaching consent to all the young people in my life. So my kids, their friends, our community, and that's really what I'm hoping to do because you got to start young.
Well, I want to thank you both, Stephanie, for giving us the space.
Thank you so much for having me.
I love this conversation. I mean, we could keep going.
I know, we could keep going. Like, I feel like you could pull you know, any kind of a fishbowl, a subject out of a fishbowl, and we could just talk about it.
I agree. I also want to thank you, Stephanie. Like, this has been so much fun, I know we've been wanting to do this. Mm-hmm. And Victor, thank you for setting this up. This was so much fun. So yeah. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Both. I'm so excited, and we hope to see you at some of our events this month.
You just listened to the Building Justice podcast. The information contained in this podcast, including its title, represents the views and opinions of the host and the guest, and do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of the Sacramento State, Chris J., and/or the Building Justice Podcast Committee.